supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
From the chewed up studios of WHYY in Philadelphia, it's time for another moth-eaten hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Is it a pest caterpillar? Is it a slug? Maybe that roly-poly ravager of your roses and other precious plants is a sawfly, a curious creature that grows up to be a primitive wasp. On today's show, we'll help you protect your plants from these weird little larvae. Otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens. That's right, potential guests are busy counting prolegs. So we will take that heap and help it. Of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and cunningly courageous countermandations. So don't dare diddle with that dial. It's all coming up like big blooms on your roses and healthy needles on your pines because you came sawflied and conquered right after this. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a weird little bugger that you've probably seen on your roses, pine trees. They assault a great number of plants, but they are the masters of camouflage, the sawfly. It looks like a slug. It looks like a caterpillar, but it's actually the larval form of a wasp that's been unchanged for hundreds of million years. Very cool, very weird. We'll tell you all about sawflies when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Charlie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Glad talking to you. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent, Charlie. It's a pleasure to speak to you, sir. Where are you?
I'm in New Bern, North Carolina, about 35 miles from the coast.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. That's a good part of the country to be in during the winter, is my understanding, Charles.
That's correct.
Yeah. What can we do for you today, Charlie?
Well, I'm a big tomato fan. This year, I decided to do the raised beds. I listen to you a lot, and I know you are an advocate of that. My ex-wife does that, and so I decided to go with the raised beds. I got them all well prepared, and of course, with this drought, I've been having to water them every couple of days. I do the deep water, not sprinkle on top or anything.
Good, good.
And last week, I got my first tomato. It was an early girl starting to show some color, So the next day it was orange, and then the next day there was a big bite taken out of it. Not one that you would expect, like a slug or anything. It looked like something that just taken a bite out of it.
So
the next day, completely gone, nothing left, no prints, no slick on the ground or anything.
No skid marks.
The second tomato started showing color, so I put some wire mesh around it to keep anything from reaching in to it.
And that should work.
But evidently, it came down from the top because there was a bite in that one the next day.
Oh, you didn't cover the top?
No, I didn't. I did after the bite appeared. And then now the tomato is just about ready to pick if it was perfect. I saved it just to see what would happen. And there are no further bites since I put the top on there. We don't have ground squirrels that I know of. I haven't seen any. I've been here 2 years. We have possums, and we have raccoons, and we have lots of gray squirrels in this neighborhood. So I'm wondering if any of those could be the culprit.
All of them could be the culprit.
You
know what you need if you really want? First of all, are your tomatoes in cages?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so really all you have to do to end this problem is cage the tops.
Okay, well, my cages they have large openings in them on the sides.
Ah, okay, so you know what? Just get a roll of chicken wire then and wrap it loosely around the outside and make little matching portions for the top. And use twist ties or something so that you can conveniently get it off.
Sounds good.
You know, I almost want, don't they, when we were in Scouts, didn't they have like slow setting molds or something where you could capture an animal's footprint? You know, isn't there a CSI, like a wet concrete thing we could do here?
I don't know. That sounds interesting. I was a scout also. I don't remember anything like that, though.
You know, there are cameras now. The cameras, I think they're called bird cams or something like that, where you can set them up and they're motion activated and they'll take a picture when something starts moving.
You know, I bought one of those outfits to put outside my door just for a monitor of the house when I go away. And
yeah.
I've never set it up. I could probably set it up out there.
I think that would show us who the culprit is, because I was going to guess evil squirrels. I'm sorry, evil squirrels is redundant. You know, because they're especially good at taking a bite out of each tomato.
Yes,
you know,
that is.
Because they're not really hungry. They just love to annoy humans. I think if it was the possums or the raccoons, both of which are good suspects, Charles, I think they would have devoured the entire tomato the first night. It's the squirrel.
Uh-huh.
It's the squirrel who really wants to get you angry.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to assess the bite formation to see if it looked like long incisors, but I couldn't really tell. It just looked like a bite taken out.
I want you to set this camera up, and I want you to catch the culprit in the act, and I want you to send us a copy of the picture.
Okay.
All right,
will
Charles.
Do.
All right, Charles.
Well, thanks for the help. I really appreciate it, and I will keep you apprised of my ventures. I'm looking forward to my first real tomato here. I really love fresh tomatoes. I'm into the heirlooms this year. I've got about 9 varieties.
Well, that's excellent. Let's keep the squirrels out of the heirlooms.
Yes.
All right, Charles. Good luck, man.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Audrey, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Audrey. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks.
And where is Audrey fine?
Washington, D.C.
Oh, very good. Nice to hear from you. What can we do for you, Audrey?
Well, this is the first year we've planted tomatoes. We redid our backyard, and we have 2 raised beds.
Excellent.
And I'm finding that we planted about 6 different kinds, and they're making beautiful leaves and flowers, but the flowers just seem to bloom and then die. They're not turning into any sort of fruit.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
What did you fill your raised beds with?
It was a mixture of dirt that was there and then a good soil from Home Depot and then some organic vegetable food.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you only put dirt in the raised beds. There's no compost in there whatsoever.
No, not this year. We didn't have anything to put in there.
Well, you know, you named one of the big box stores, and no offense, but you're really not going to find the right gardening supplies you need at those places. I took a walk through one the other day, just kind of hoping. And when I went to the area where they had the bag soils and mulch, there was literally nothing that I could recommend. But still, I mean, a lot of people just grow tomatoes in regular garden dirt and with the right nutrients. Now, you say you bought an organic fertilizer, granular
right.
form?
Yeah, it's granular form, and that was from a good plant store.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. And how did you apply it? What did you do?
When we dug the hole for the plants, we put it in, as the directions said, into the hole with some good soil,
mm-hmm.
and then put the plant. What's interesting to me is that they're like 5 feet tall with beautiful leaves, but just no fruit.
And
it's like the plants are putting all their energy into making leaves.
Right, which is a sign of excessive nitrogen fertilization. What do you remember what the numbers were on your fertilizer bag or box or bottle?
No, I'm sorry. I have no idea.
Yeah, if you've got plants that are, and you obviously you have good sun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how are you watering the plants?
Well, for a while we had a lot of rain.
Right.
But now I water it. It was pretty hot here. I water it when the soil starts to get dry.
Yeah, but you're not testing the soil down deep. The surface of the soil
no.
dries out in hours. So you're over watering.
You think I'm overwatering?
Yeah. What I want you to do is water that plot deeply. You know, can you take a hose out to it?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Set the hose to just like drip, drip, drip.
Okay.
And turn it on. Maybe you might need a timer. Like, what time does the sun hit your plants? Around 8, 9 a.m.?
Yes.
Yeah. Turn it on like 4 hours before that. And let it drip and really saturate the soil. And then just do that maybe twice a week. Because I get the sense that there's no mulch on the surface of your soil.
No, there's no mulch.
Okay. Try to find some shredded leaves this fall so you can have mulch for next season. And you haven't used this organic fertilizer since?
No, just when we planted it.
I think you must have accidentally picked up something that was for growing sweet corn or something, because you've obviously given these plants lots of nitrogen and nothing else. So I want you to go out and see if you can find a nice bag of premium compost. You are in Washington, D.C., and you should be able to find Merlin's Leaf Grow product in bags.
Okay.
Leaf Grow is yard waste compost made by the state of Maryland. It's available all through the D.C. area. The specialty garden centers in your area, I know for a fact, because I've done a lot of appearances in D.C. this spring, they also have a fabulous compost that's made from lobster waste. That's just tremendous for tomatoes. But I also want you to buy a bag of bone meal. I want you on the surface of the soil around each plant to put a cup of bone meal, not up against the stem of the plant, but like make a circle a few inches away and then flatten it out so it's not a big mound, maybe like an eighth of an inch thick, but use up a whole cup per plant. Cover that with the compost. Start watering correctly, deeply. Twice a week, because you're in D.C., which gets really hot in the summer, and
right.
I predict you're going to have more tomatoes than you know what to do with.
Oh, I hope so.
All right?
All right. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Audrey.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and pick a big bunch of great-tasting June peas. Whether you planted snow peas or snap peas, the secret to a long harvest and the best taste is to pick them young, when the peas inside the pods are just beginning to swell up. Don't let them go unpicked. If those peas reach full size and become viable seeds, the plants will stop producing for the season. But don't you go a pea picking just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to stop the nefarious slug-like pest known as the sawfly. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later on the show, are those caterpillars decimating your roses and pine trees and apples? What about these crazy things? They look a little bit like bristly slugs. Well, they all could be sawflies, the little-known larva of a weird primitive wasp that can do a lot of garden damage. We'll cue you in on how to control sawflies when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Michael. Where are you, man?
I live in, north of Indianapolis in Muncie, Indiana.
Okay.
And I've got an ant problem.
Okay.
In the middle of our vegetable garden, and it's about 2 foot square, and they're not real big ants, but they're just maybe a little over a quarter of an inch.
Right. Now, what's 2 feet square, the ant mound or your garden?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
So you actually have a mound?
Yeah, it's I rototilled it and dug it up and everything, but they come back.
Oh, yeah. Ants are the most numerous creature on the planet. It's either ants or termites. Nobody knows for sure because we don't have X-ray vision. But the colonies are huge. And unless you were accidentally to impale the queen, the colony will always rebuild itself. Ants are great at surviving that kind of disturbance. Now, are they doing anything bad, or are they just getting on your nerves?
Well, they're just right in the center, and I think last year I had a tomato plant about a foot from it, and I don't know what happened to the tomato plant, but it died, but I'm not sure. If it was any place else, I wouldn't bother them.
Okay. No, that's fair. Sometimes ants will begin herding aphids and create aphid problems in your garden. I don't know what happened to your tomato last year either, but I would predict that the ants were innocent. In general, ants are kind of benign and beneficial in areas where there are a lot of termite problems.
Okay.
Ants and termites are natural enemies. So you're very smart to leave ants alone in other places of your yard because ants actually harass termites and keep them away from people's properties. They invade the termite colonies all the time. And so in that way, ants are great friends of ours, and they aerate the soil. But they do have this weird habit that if they get near roses or peppers or other plants that are prone to aphids, the ants will begin to farm aphids on the plant, like dairy farmers milking them for their honeydew. And they will actually protect the aphids, who eventually will begin to smother the plant or just become an insect nuisance. So I think your smartest thing is just get some boric acid baits, the same as I recommend for ant problems indoors.
Okay.
I would recommend you get some sort of a sealed bait system. You know, because it is a little sweet, there's always the remote possibility that bees would be attracted to the sweet liquid. And you don't you don't want that because boric acid, it's not as toxic to bees as to ants, but it's not any good for any kind of an insect. But, you know, they used to have, I don't know if they do it anymore, but there were two varieties of those little tin cans. And one was a chemical ant killer. The other was boric acid. I know one of the big mail order companies markets these little kits where the boric acid bait goes into a special holder that's big enough for ants but not big enough for bees. Or you could be clever and just, you know, put a box down over top of the bait, cut a small hole in the side of the box, put it next to the ant nest, and make sure there's a trail leading into the box. And the ants will go for the bait and then leave the ants alone. Don't bother them after that. Once they start carrying the bait back to the colony, it'll be fed to the queen. And it doesn't kill the ants right away. It takes days. It takes 5 or 6 days.
Okay.
So by the time the first ant gets sick and they realize something's wrong, the whole colony is dying off from boric acid, which is harmless to us, harmless to the environment, but ants can't metabolize it. And by mixing it with a sweet bait, we get the ants to take this very low dose of boric acid. Because if you give them too high a dose, it'll kill them right away. And like I said, there's an endless supply. But once they survive long enough to feed this sweet stuff to the queen, that colony is doomed.
Okay.
And what people really like about this tactic is that you get the ants to do all the work.
I like that part.
Yeah, see, I knew that. All right, so it's perfectly all right to get rid of this colony inside your veggie garden. You could be avoiding future problems. Use boric acid bait traps and be patient. From the first time the ants start going to the traps back to the nest, in like, I predict about 7 days, you won't see any ant activity anymore.
That'll be good. Thanks very much. I appreciate that, and I'll work on it today.
All right. Very good, Michael. You take care.
And thanks again.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Leanne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Leanne. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. And where is Leanne feeling good?
In Harleysville, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good.
Okay. I'm 40 years old, and I've never planted anything before in my life, And this year my husband says, let's try planting a garden. So we went out and basically went crazy and bought all kinds of stuff. And I have things that are coming in really good, like my tomato plant's doing real good. But main question I have is in this area, I guess, I have some pumpkins and squash that are growing. And they're growing very well. They're very healthy. The plants, like the leaves are. But I started to get, they're albino pumpkins, okay? And I started to get one, and it got about probably an inch in diameter, and then it just shriveled up and died.
Okay.
So am I overwatering, underwatering? I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Okay. What was the area before it became your vegetable garden?
It was just basically grass, and then I tore everything out of there, used a mantis, and I put Miracle-Gro in that area for gardening Miracle-Gro.
Okay. So you removed the grass physically?
Yes.
And then you tilled the soil with a little mantis tiller. That's a little handheld tiller.
Right.
And then you went out and bought Miracle-Gro potting soil, garden soil, something like that?
Yeah, it's for the garden. We also have the container plants where mm-hmm. you need the moisture control. They're doing very well.
Did you plant seeds or did you put plants in the ground?
I started them indoors. And when they were pretty strong and healthy, I took them out and they just took off from there. I mean,
but Leanne, that's unusual. Seed starting is not an easy thing for a first-time gardener to do. What did you do to provide them with light, for instance?
We have an area in our laundry room with shelves, and it has basically just fluorescent lighting and natural light. There's a window right there.
So you kept the plants really close to the fluorescent lights?
I would move them around between the lights and the window.
Okay.
So, you know, I kind of would move them with whichever way they would grow, I would turn them the opposite way.
Okay, well, you can't be that bad a gardener if you got your starts through being alive. Now, you took your squash plants, pumpkin is a form of squash, you took those outside, and I presume you're not gardening in raised beds or anything, you're just gardening in flat ground.
Right. I cleared the area out and then, like, filled it, like I said, with the Miracle-Gro where I was putting the plant.
Right. But you do realize that pumpkins are going to take up an enormous amount of room.
That's what I had heard, yes. So there's only, like, three pumpkin plants in that. It's a totally separate part of the yard.
Leanne, I have 1,000 square feet, and I couldn't accommodate a three pumpkin
oh,
plants.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you're going to need to cull that down to one because they're going to rapidly get out of control. Now,
okay.
Now, you started with a soil that has some chemical fertilizer in it.
That's correct.
Have you done, I'd prefer you stop using that, of course, being organic. Have you done anything to feed your plants since?
Yes, I used the Miracle-Gro that you attach it to the end of a hose and
yeah.
you spray it.
You know, these chemical fertilizers are not the best thing for tender plants. You're really salting the area. And when we get really hot days, chemical fertilizer can be death for sensitive
okay.
plants. I'd prefer you switch to a natural fertilizer. Now, you asked me about watering. That's going to be the last question. Is there any mulch on the ground to keep water in the soil?
There's no mulch.
Okay. And how often do you water?
Every morning before the sun comes up and every night after it goes down.
Oh, yeah. You're killing the plants.
Oh,
you're going to
okay.
kill. You're going to kill every plant you have.
Okay, so how often should I be watering?
Never water in the evening, especially with disease-prone plants like tomatoes and squash plants. Never water in the evening.
Okay.
You should always water in the morning, and when you water, you should water deeply, like turn a sprinkler on just before the sun comes up, and really soak the garden for an hour or two. and try to find some old leaves on your property and shred them up and at least mulch the areas underneath the plants, or else you're going to start to get a lot of weed growth and you're also going to lose the moisture right away. Right now, your plants are getting a little wet, then they're drying out, they're staying wet overnight, they're very unhappy. But think about how nature waters the landscape. Real deep soakings about once a week is what plants like. So as long as the squash and pumpkins are still alive, there's plenty of time to form flowers and get lots of fruits. But I'm warning you right now, it's too many pumpkin plants for your size for your size garden, okay?
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, good luck.
All right, you have a good day.
1-888-346-9499. Grant, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Grant. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm well, thank you.
And where is Grant Well?
Well, I live in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is a suburb of Oklahoma City.
One of our favorite sites, one of the first places to pick up our show when we went national. Always a pleasure to talk to our Oklahoma friends. What can we do for you?
Thank you. Well, as you know, Mike, here summer heat can get up to 100 plus for a couple of weeks at a time. It's already reached 99 degrees this summer, and today it's 98 degrees.
Right.
I have a lot with both sun areas and fairly deep shade areas. In the shade areas, there are native oak trees, maple, pear trees, things of that sort. And so I've planted part of the lawn with Bermuda, where I have the sun. And in the shaded areas, I've put in tall fescue.
Okay, so one warm season, one cool season.
Exactly. I reseed the fescue each spring, and it germinates well.
No. You should sow the fescue in the fall.
Sow it in the fall rather than spring.
Yeah, okay? Yeah. You'll get much better results.
All right. That's a good, because it has winter to develop root system.
Yeah, it loves winter time, especially you're slow to develop winter. So I would say anytime from the last week of August through the third week of September would be the absolute ideal time to overseed that fescue.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll change my season on that. The Bermuda grass, you know, is no problem with my sprinkler system, but the fescue can die out in the summer heat. And keep it alive, I've been running the sprinklers daily, and I just wanted to have a suggestion from you if there might be something other than tall fescue grass for the shade areas, and also, you know, how I might best treat it as far as fertilization and weed control and that sort of thing.
Well, I don't think that when we get into summer that the answer is more water. I'm hoping that you cut the fescue to where it's 3.5 inches after you're done cutting.
Right.
And you do.
Yeah, we try to leave it longer than the Bermuda, of course.
So how often do you water? What time of day do you water, and how do you do it?
Well, I water early in the morning. I have a sprinkler system.
Right.
And I water probably starting around 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
And each of the areas, I vary a little. The Bermuda grass, I don't water it as much. The fescue, I'm watering for about, with my sprinkler system, for about as much as 30 minutes.
That's not enough.
Really?
No. What I would suggest, and is this a zone system where you can only water so much at once?
Right.
And how often are you watering your half-hour waters?
Well, during the really hot summer days, I've been doing it every day.
Okay. What I would suggest is you switch. How long can you water with your system? Can you set it to whatever you want?
I can go up to 45 minutes.
And that's all? Yeah, see, what we should be doing is we should be really saturating each of the sections in sequence, one a day, for like, seriously, like 3-4 hours.
Really?
Yeah, because it's the deep water. What you're doing here is you're creating a shallow root system because it takes grass 20 minutes to realize it's being watered. So you're shutting the water off 10 minutes after the grass kind of opens up to really receive it. And your soil, because of the tree competition, isn't really holding any water for the grass to catch up to, so to speak.
So soil is pretty much red clay type.
When yeah. You get down there. So you need to somehow fix this system to where you can water each section. And I'm going to say like from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then the next day, do the next section, do that in sequence. And if you can just do that once a week, I think you're going to see tremendous improvement. I guarantee at the end of the summer, if you can follow this schedule, the roots of your grass will be three times as deep, even with your clay, and be able to store the water they need.
Right. I think you got it.
So I think that's just it. I think you're doing a lot of things correctly. You have a great mix of grasses. I don't hear enough people who mix warm season and cool season. But in your climate, I would absolutely recommend it. I think all you got to do is switch to this deep, less frequent watering, and you're going to see the results that you couldn't have even dreamed of. And, of course, don't feed the fescue over summer.
Right.
Give the fescue a big thank you feeding in the fall to thank it for surviving summer. Do your reseeding then. And in the spring, you know, just give it a light feeding after the winter is over. But if you do the deep watering, I think you're out of the woods, so to speak.
You'll work at it, and I do appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Grant.
Thank you now.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind gardeners who are enjoying peas, lettuce, spinach, pansies, and other cool weather crops that summer heat is the enemy of your plants. To keep them producing a little longer, give them extra water, and if possible, use shade cloth or an old beach umbrella to give them some protection from the afternoon sun. But don't go getting shady in your backyard just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the story behind the curious insect known as the sawfly. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to the story behind one of the most curious foes you will ever face in your garden. Sometimes it looks like some weird slug is eating your plants. Most of the time, it looks like you have an infestation of pest caterpillars. But sometimes you have neither. You have the larval form of an ancient and primitive wasp known as the sawfly. We'll tell you how to figure out if you do or not and what to do about it when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Matt, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Where are you doing well, sir?
Bucks County, PA.
Okay, a suburb of Philadelphia, county just outside of Philly. What can we do for Matt in Bucks County?
Sure. I actually have a couple questions. The first is my lawn. It's a new lawn. I moved into new construction last year, and it was seeded by the builder in the heat of the summer, and the entire lawn is full sun. So I overseeded and spread maybe a quarter inch of compost in the fall.
Okay.
And put down pre-emergent this spring.
Okay, that should have been a good plan.
It's filled in. Yeah, it's filled in, but it's not this nice green, soft lawn. It's this kind of yellowing, really rough and stalky growth.
Well, what did
not
you?
Even sure, it's grass.
What did you overseed with?
You know, something I got from the big box store. It was a blend of rye, fescue, and bluegrass.
Kind of a anything goes situation. But you said it's full sun, right?
It is. The whole yard is full sun.
Why didn't you?
Only the house shadow blocks anything.
Why didn't you just go with straight bluegrass? Like, you know, very few people who have full sun lawns are disappointed when they pick a named variety of bluegrass, you know, which is not the cheapest seed in the store. But then you can buy a relatively dwarfing variety that doesn't grow as lustily as regular bluegrass. And, of course, these professional grass breeders are breeding for the perfect lawn to walk on. I fear that you may have just put down cheap junk.
Okay.
How do you water your lawn?
I just have a hose sprinkler set up. It's four zones, and it covers most of the lawn.
And when do you turn that on, and when do you turn it off, and how often?
Oh, I think I have it set for 6 a.m. For 15 minutes per zone.
No, useless. Absolutely useless. You are hurting your grass.
Okay.
What you want to do, you got four zones to water.
Yeah.
Do them over the course of 4 days. And I want you to have that sprinkler going from like 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. in each zone. Because you need to really soak the soil and then have that moisture retreat so that the roots of the grass are forced to follow it. Now, the big question is, are you just going to put up with this, or are you going to just reseed the whole lawn in the fall with a real premium grass that's going to be easier to care for?
Well, that's a leading question that I'd have for you is do I need to destroy my lawn, or can I just maintain this kind of poor quality grass until the fall, overseed, and just let the new seed kind of push out the bad stuff?
You would have to destroy this lawn in the fall somehow. You'd have to till it up, and then you'd always have remnants of it coming up. You know, because it's not, if you start watering it correctly, it's not going to have a lot of bare spots.
Right.
And, you know, you will have, you know what, let's go through a 6 weeks of good watering. And really deep watering. See if that changes the texture and the color, because you did feed with compost in the fall. You put corn gluten meal down, right? You said in the spring.
Yep.
And so, you know, watering is where most people fall down because most systems aren't really set up for the long, deep watering that encourages a healthy lawn. But I tell you, with you in full sun in this summer so hot already, you really need that deep watering to get those roots going down. Okay, so I think you got a plan. Let's see what happens with the watering, and then you make your decision mid-August. Okay, Matt?
Great. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, take care, man.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Diane, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Diane. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Diane doing pretty good?
Well, from my head down to my neck.
Because the something...
Anything below that is kind of itchy right now.
Oh, okay. And where you live?
In Longview, Texas.
Okay. And the cause of your itchiness is garden related?
I'm not much of a gardener, but I do have to take my little critter out into the backyard from time to time to do his business. And it seems that I've come upon some poison ivy and poison oak.
Oh, okay.
They're both out there, and I've tracked the stuff in on my shoes.
Right.
And so...
So you were walking through, like, a heavily wooded area.
Well, I don't know about heavily wooded, but, I mean, I've got, you know, a good, you know, lawn in the backyard. And then it wasn't until recently I noticed that these little... plants were growing up, and I didn't even know what they were. My lawn care man told me. That
but they're
one
still
was
small?
Poison ivy, and the other one was poison oak.
And they're still small?
They're still fairly small, but they're just kind of interwoven in with the grass. And I've got that centipede grass.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And what's happened is my dog, I just realized. And
your
my
dog got it on the fur.
Walking through all the stuff, and his little paws are carrying it in. Plus, it's coming, it's piggybacking in on his hair, and then not to mention the bottoms of my shoes.
Now, it is not unusual for pet owners to be picking up poison ivy off of their dog's fur over and over again. So, I hope at this point you've given the dog a bath in cool water. You know, I think once you get the house cleaned up, and that's just going to involve shampooing the carpets or going over them with one of those steam machines that you rent. And I presume you have a steam cleaner for your hardwood floors.
Well,
It's just water, and it steams it up on a cotton surface, and you just go over all your surfaces. Same with your furniture. Make sure you do your doorknobs and latches and anything you may have touched, because I'm sure you've got it on your hands from petting your dog.
Yeah.
So anything you touched after that, like the telephone, like especially doorknobs, remote controls, just wipe those things down with
alcohol?
No. Just cool water. Cool water dissolves the uracil oil. And, you know, if you haven't talked to your doctor, if you have a bad rash, they can tell you what level cortisone cream or ointment to use on your body to relieve the symptoms of the rash. But I presume we're getting to what can you do about these small growths in your backyard.
Yeah.
With the plants being small, I think the danger here is also very small. So you would hire a couple of high school kids, for a couple of days who want to make some money. You would outfit them with IV block. You would give them, like, all the plastic bags they would need, a hose and big trash cans. Show them what this stuff looks like. Tell them they have to really soak the soil really well, pull it out slowly, throw away the plastic bags, and then build up your lawn organically. You've learned what it looks like. So, you know, every one of us who has an outdoor landscape that we let animals in or work around in, you always have to do a fresh poison ivy inventory every season and pull out the plants while they're young. Because it is a native plant, birds can safely eat the berries. They're attracted by the berries in the fall. And so there's always going to be new plants coming up. It sounds like you just got hit by a flock of birds at the wrong time last fall who had just eaten a ton of berries. Now you're getting the result. Hopefully it's a one-time thing.
And
you shouldn't have to do it again, because the birds are otherwise really good to have around. But it sounds like you're 90% in control already.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Diane.
I think I'm going to live.
Good. All right. You take care.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Look, up in the sky, it's a slug. It's a worm. No, it's a sawfly. Kathy in North Philly gets us started by writing, "My roses are being decimated by little green worms. Some new branches have no leaves left at all. After a bit of research, I found out they are sawfly larvae, and I can't find any mention of them on your site. Other websites suggest wildly different ways of dealing with these creatures, and some sites say that they'll just eventually go away on their own. As flies, I assume. But will there be anything left of my roses at that point?" Steve in El Porto, California, writes, "Every spring for the past 10 years, some kind of fly or bee inserts an egg into the soft new growth of my hybrid tea roses. It hatches quickly, and the larval stage proceeds to spiral downward through the tissue, girdling it. The end result is a drooping and soon dead cane. By carefully slicing the damaged portion open, I have found the larva. Is it a sawfly, a rose slug? It's about an eighth of an inch long. Piola seems to help. Any other suggestions?" Roy, just outside Lambertville, New Jersey, chimes in. "For the second year in a row, my Mugo pines and black pines have been beset by sawfly larvae. They appear as small green caterpillars that cluster around the tips of the new candles and quickly strip the life from the area. They also have this curious behavior of waving in unison when they're disturbed. How can I rid my pines of these pests?" And finally, Pamela in Asheville, North Carolina writes, "Little green worms are decimating the leaves of my roses, and squishing just isn't keeping them under control. I did some investigation and have concluded that they are rose sawflies. Two sources say that BT won't work to get rid of these buggers. Is there a treatment that will, but not harm any beneficial insects at the same time? Well, sawflies are just plain weird, kids. The larvae often look a little bit like a slug, but more often they look exactly like caterpillars. Apparently, you have to count the number of, quote, pro legs to know for sure. Sawflies have more of those creepy, crawly little things than caterpillars. But these pests are neither slug nor butterfly to be. Their adult form is a primitive, non-stinging wasp that's been around for millions of years unchanged. The larvae of sawflies are known for attacking roses and for doing so every which way. Some types tunnel into the stems, some skeletonize the leaves like Japanese beetles, and others are what are known as leaf rollers. They curl a big leaf around themselves to hide as they chew away. But roses are far from their only prey. There are a large number of sawfly species, and they are pestiferous on a wide range of plants. The pine sawfly is an especially pesky member of the family. I'll bet that some of the, quote, caterpillars I've seen on my roses have actually been sawflies. And pity the poor organic rose grower who sees what appears to be a pest caterpillar chomping away and sprays that great natural and organic caterpillar controller, BT, over and over again, but to no avail. Because it don't matter how much you look like a caterpillar, you have to actually be a caterpillar to be done in by BT. Now, most experts do feel that the damage done by these pests is indeed self-limiting. That is, they tend to disappear before extensive damage can be done. And, of course, strong plants that are fed organically, have lots of airflow, and that aren't being mulched with wood or watered to death stand the best chance of perking right back up after the sawflies, fly. Different types of sawflies go through different life cycles. So if you have a plant they're being persistent about attacking season after season, read up on your exact foe. Many kinds of sawflies can be controlled by cultivating the soil at the base of the attacked plants at the right time of year to destroy their overwintering form. Cleaning the orchard floor at the end of the season is essential to controlling the kinds of sawflies that attack apples and other fruits. And that cleaning prevents lots of other problems as well. When any kind of tree is their target, hang suet feeders from the branches over winter to attract chickadees and other birds that specialize in eating such pests. If your sawfly foe overwinters in parts of the tree, like inside some pine needles, spray dormant oil on the trees in the dead of winter. In warmer months, use a lighter weight, quote, all-season horticultural oil. The product mentioned by one of our listeners, Piola, by the way, is a lightweight horticultural oil with a small amount of natural pesticide added. If you can see the pest being active on or in trees or shrubs, prune out and destroy the infested branches as early in the season as possible. On roses and similar plants, you can hand-pick the pests. You can spray them off with sharp streams of water early in the morning. Once you knock them down, they can't get back up. Or you can spray neem or one of the new spinosad products. You can spray either of these low-toxicity pesticides on the leaves or directly on the pests. But don't spray any on the flowers or you could hurt bees. In fact, if a rose bush is covered with flowers and sawflies, harvest all the roses for cut bouquets and then spray to kill those weird little wasps. You'll get rid of the sawflies and encourage a new set of blooms to appear quickly. Well, that sure was an interesting look at the weird world of sawflies now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to spray me with spinosad if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. And please check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Our webmasters are Rich the Lionhearted Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our intern, Jessica Mandick, has never ravaged a rose. Neither has our helper, Elizabeth Arick. Congratulations to our volunteer, Heather McLean, who just landed her first job in the business. Knock 'em dead, Heather. I saw a fly, says Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. You must be using a darn small saw, says our editor, Al Banks. I'm shoe fly Mike McGrath, and I can sympathize with this week's pest. Why, just last week, somebody looked my way and said, what is that, some kind of slug? So I guess I should try and pick up my pace so I can slither back and see you next week. Is it a fiery hot spice or the root of all evil? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how you can grow your own horseradish, plus your fabulous phone calls.